Time for our local hero spotlight with Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero, folks, who are in the midst of their climate change and farming week, where there's a series of events talking about climate change and farming. And as we all know, one of the big things that leads to climate change is the world's obsession with eating meat. However, are there good and ethical and environmentally friendly ways to make meat part of your diet? Well, that's one of the things that we'll talk about with Hetty Bell Farm in Warwick, Massachusetts. And we're speaking with Jennifer Corr and Olivier Flagolet. Did I say that right, Olivier?
You did.
Trying my best to do French as best as I can. But tell us what you're growing at Hetty Bell Farm, or raising at Hetty Bell Farm in Warwick.
So we are raising a variety of livestock such as beef, lamb, pork, chickens, and ducks, some turkeys.
How much space are these animals growing on?
We are currently using about 50 acres of pastures for the ruminants, and roughly 10, 15 acres of woodland for the pigs.
Hetty Bell is a farm that's on land that's really how you can productively and ethically use that land. Mm-hmm. You cannot be growing produce on that land.
So if it were not for the farm, the management of the land would have to take other resources up, and human beings have to eat, and a lot of us like meat. Jennifer from Hetty Bell Farm, tell us about what got you into the world of raising meats.
Yeah, I did not grow up on a farm. I grew up in suburban America, like many of us. Mm-hmm. And I think for us, starting the business was in so many ways about the life that we were going to provide for our kids and the rhythms of the natural world and how we could be connected to that. So raising animals, right? We're raising sentient beings for human nourishment. That's an important sort of responsibility to do that right. So for us, this was about raising the kind of meat that we wanted to be eating as a family, and how could we make that available to other people?
What about you, Olivier? You are from France originally. Mm-hmm. What brought you to the United States and got you into the world of raising animals?
Big question. Let's say life taking me where I needed to be at the right time. Mm-hmm. I did a lot of traveling, and back in the 80s, I ended up in Vermont. But eventually, after meeting Jen, I ended up working in farm education place in Athol, Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And from that moment, Jen and I, we were both working at the same place. And slowly, as we are doing our job together, we slowly nourish the dream of farming for ourselves. And it just happened that we had moved to Warwick, and that we realized a lot of land was available to us.
And it's worth noting that we are partially achieving Kalisa's dream of focusing on Franklin County towns that are not in the fabulous 413, but are in the fabulous 978, including Warwick, Massachusetts.
One thing that we've encountered with farms that are doing meat is the issue of processing. Have you seen that it's an issue for you, and where do you get yours done?
Yeah, so we use Adams Farm, and we're pretty fortunate that Adams is in Athol, so it's very close for us, and we center in every way possible animal welfare in our entire farm and kind of operation. And so that transport from the farm to the processing facility is a source of stress for livestock. So we feel really grateful that we have a place that's in within 10, 12 minutes from the farm. So that stress is reduced pretty dramatically. And we have had a long, long time relationships with the folks there at Adams and feel really pleased with the quality of what we get and with that partnership.
We're speaking with Jennifer Corr and Olivier Flagolet, who are both from Hetty Bell Farm in Warwick, and Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero, folks.
So I think it's, you know, a lot of times we have people on who do farm CSAs around produce, but you have a meat CSA that you do for the households that are not your own. So I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that.
Sure thing. So since we began our business in 2010-ish, we've known from the beginning with clarity that we wanted to provide a CSA, that was the business model that we were pursuing. And part of that is around being in community with other families. So we have about 175 members. As you mentioned, Monty, Warwick is not a huge town. It's a small and sometimes forgotten town. So we cannot move all of our meat in Warwick. So we rely pretty heavily on partnerships partnerships with others where we also do distributions. So one of those is at Atlas Farm. One is at Crimson and Clover Farm in Florence. And then we also have a distribution in Brattleboro, as well as on farm in Warwick. And we put our meat together as a multi-species package, if you will. So it's many months in the winter season, in the fall winter. And it includes our 100% grass-fed lamb and beef, our organically fed chicken and pork, and then we sell birds on the side as well, ducks and turkeys.
It's getting to be the part of the year where people might be thinking about turkeys a little bit more frequently. What about if people want turkeys for Thanksgiving? Is that something that Hedy Bell raises, Olivier?
We do raise some, not too many as we used to, but mm-hmm. we have a few left.
Was your farm impacted by the bird flu? I mean, we know that there was a major situation in the midst of our own pandemic. The birds were suffering as well. How did Hedy Bell fare during the bird flu?
We were not impacted at all. As far as I know, as far as I've observed.
You would be the one that would know, though, right?
Right, I guess so. But
I mean, Monty wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know.
Maybe
you're there.
Jennifer might
the
know.
The birds might know more than
as
you.
As far as I know, meaning as far as I have observed, of course, if we had had a case of bird flu, I think the processor would have noticed and rejected all of the birds.
Right.
But we are a small farm, and we are making a point, intentional point, to raise all of our animals in such a way they can exercise their natural instinct and behavior as much as possible. That's the least we can do to these creatures, because ultimately they're making the sacrifice to give us their life so that we can provide a family with good meat, but also all of our members and their kids, which is very important. So we make the point to raise our animals outside, not in a confined environment, even the most fragile ones, such as the birds. So our chickens live outside pretty much all the time. We have losses, of course, from predators like hawks mostly, but we weigh this into the balance and we think it's worth it. Is it a reason why we did not get affected by the bird flu? It's possible. If so, then good for us.
Yeah. Speaking with Hedy Bell Farm in Warwick, Jennifer and Olivier, and Phil Corman from CISA.
Jennifer and Olivier, you were mentioning that you used to think of yourselves as grass farmers, but now you're actually thinking more about the soil and the water. So could you walk us through that?
Yeah, I think it's as simple as thinking about the fullness of the resources that we both rely on and impact. So Warwick sits at the very top of a watershed. So the choices that we make with our livestock there, they impact everybody downstream from us. And it's something that we're quite conscious of. And then I would also just say, as we think about meat and climate and the resources that we rely on to raise the food that we depend on, I think livestock often get demonized in this narrative as we sort of collectively think about this challenge of the climate crisis that we're in, right? But what we don't think about is the biogenic carbon cycle and sort of the cyclical nature and where livestock fit into that. So we all learned in eighth grade, maybe seventh grade, about photosynthesis, right? So there's carbon in the atmosphere. Plants uptake that carbon and they turn it into vegetative matter that grazing ruminants need to eat. So they eat that. And then in the course of their digestive process, they poop and they pee and they burp, just like us. And so I know. That urine and that manure.
I'm just so disappointed to talk about poop and pee right now.
I know. It's important. It's cycling. But it's the burps that get really demonized, right? It's that methane. And yes, methane is a really potent greenhouse gas. That is real. And that is a part of livestock farming. But I think it's important to realize that methane's in the atmosphere for like maybe 12 years. And then it converts back into CO2. And then those same plants take that up again. So if we thought about like the global herd of animals on the planet, if that were to stay the same size, we wouldn't actually be increasing carbon in the atmosphere. This is a very cyclical process that is not related to the burning of fossil fuels, where we're actually extracting carbon and then releasing new atmospheric carbon. So I think that when we think about sort of what are those resources, how are livestock engaged in managing those resources on a cycle, there's a place for grazing animals. There are partners in helping us manage this land for water quality, for soil building, and for plant management.
But if it were to scale up to a a huge level, that's when it starts to become even more problematic.
Yes. You mentioned the word huge. We're not huge.
Right.
We're small, intentionally small, and we are going to remain small. We have a relationship with the natural world. We need to be able to maintain that relationship, to maintain the balance between what we take and what we give back. It gives us time to raise our animals as humanly as possible in order to offer all of our members the cleanest, purest meat we can possibly offer.
Your process is so interesting, especially since this is a traditional like raising method in France, and you have a thing on your website about how you're not labeled organic, which I know is a common thing around here, but would you mind talking a little bit about what you're actually doing, which definitely is organic, versus this label that we put on a lot of things for farms much larger than yours, who may not actually be contributing to the environment in the way that you are?
Yeah, we had chosen early on not to pursue organic certification just because of our scale and because we sell 100% of our product directly to customers. So we have this relationship. Our farm is very open. Our members come to the farm. We can talk to them about our practices. We can talk to them about the grain that we feed when we do feed grain, which is just to the pigs and the poultry. We have thought about certification recently only because it is an easier story to tell when you're communicating to people in a wholesale environment. But honestly, for us, we manage all of our grassland organically. We're only applying our own manure and organic wood ash. We purchase only certified organic feed because it's important for us to have that assurance that the land where that grain is grown elsewhere is managed organically. So for us, that level of commitment has been something that has been clear since the beginning for us and has been something we've been unwilling to compromise, even when the price of organic grain has skyrocketed. And we've found other ways to absorb that cost by being more efficient in our business. We recycle a lot, we reuse things, we try to fix things that are broken instead of buying new things. And that allows us to maintain that commitment to certified organic grain and to these grassland management practices.
So if I was interested in diving in, getting a meat chair, is there anything you would tell me if I've not had your meat products before or from another small local farm? Would I be tasting differences from the commercial meat that I might be used to eating?
Animals have flavor. They should have flavor. And so if we hear anything from someone who's taking that leap from really conventional sort of grocery store meat into our CSA, it's that, wow, the flavors are strong. So pork tastes like pork. Chicken tastes like chicken. Beef is beefy. And that's something that we celebrate. And we try to provide a lot of recipes and a lot of cooking tips because cooking 100% grass-fed is a different process. So we try to provide as much education information for our members as possible so that they can make this transition and really come to enjoy those flavors and come to enjoy those qualities around 100% grass-fed.
But you can get the share through SNAP too, which I think is really, really cool. And then there's a part of your CSA where people can donate in order to offset some of the extra cost of those people with SNAP getting access to your share.
You've got it. And we've been doing that for a number of years. And I would say about 10% of our membership are households that use their SNAP benefits to purchase a share. And that's an important thing for us.
Try to make it equal for everybody or as best as we possibly can. And if eating meat is something that you're going to continue to do, but caring about the environment is something that you care about, I think you should think about eating small, eating local. And if you're going to keep eating meat, supporting the farms that do this sort of thing, like Hetty Bell Farm in Warwick, Mass., on the outskirts of Franklin County in the 978, near the fabulous 413, Olivier Flagolet and Jennifer Corr from Hetty Bell Farm with their meat chairs coming online very shortly. And Phil Corman from CESA, the local hero folks. You can find out about all our local hero farms at buylocalfood.org.